Welcome to SILRAP Podcasts. You are about to listen to a service of the Center for International Law Research and Policy.
Gandhi said, simplicity is universal. Three words in Latin, I won't pester you with more. Inter homines esse. It means to live. It's synonymous with living in the Latin language. It means to be among people. This is all I'm going to speak about. I have the company of five learned, illustrious churchmen from the Catholic faith. Actually, Ambrose lived in Milan, which was the center of the western part of the Roman Empire in the 4th century. Augustine, just after that. He lived most of his life in northern Africa, also in a Roman area. Aquinas lived in the middle of the 12th century. Vitoria and Suarez were Spaniards, and they lived at the end of the 15th and beginning of 16th century. I shall not go into their lives in any detail. I only want to say Ambrose, he was actually born to power and superiority. Augustine had a more modest background. Both of them nonetheless became bishops. Aquinas was from a noble family, but became a monk, a Dominican monk. Vittoria, a Dominican monk, and Suarez as well. Vittoria's intellect was inflamed by the behavior of the Spaniards as they discovered the so-called New World, the Indians. Suarez was sitting in his studies and he was simply meditating and reflecting. And a wonderful thing about these five men, I'm sorry that I won't have a fortnight, 8 hours a day, but I will give you a little bit of their insight. It's absolutely magnificent. Aquinas said, it should be noted that different ways of knowing give us different services. The astronomer and the natural philosopher both conclude that the earth is round, but the astronomer does this through a mathematical middle that is abstracted from matter, whereas the natural philosopher considers a middle lodged in matter. Thus, there is nothing to prevent another science from treating in the light of divine revelation what the philosophical disciplines treat as knowable in the light of human reason. Distinguishing reason from faith, but associating the two with one another, the five Catholic thinkers all made remarkable philosophic inquiries into the reasons and principles of the human condition, hereunder with a specific view to human behavior responsibility. Crime and punishment in the community of humankind were subject to their inquiries as well. And a wonderful thing about these five, it can teach us much, is this, that the one is really standing on the shoulders of the other and paying attention to what has been said before and building on it and using it and elaborating it. And that's how things developed. And they mostly developed their thinking. Actually, Aquinas was a representative of what is known as scholasticism, as it is a method of learning still used across the world. I would like to say it's conceptual analysis and careful drawing of distinctions. This in combination with rigorous dialectical reasoning to gain knowledge by inference and to resolve contradictions. It was the method then applied to reconcile Christian doctrine with Greek philosophy, influence that he had been also from India, and especially to reconcile Christian doctrine with the doctrine of Aristotle. And Aristotle was rediscovered in Europe in the 12th century. Then he was translated into Latin, and Aquinas became one of the main commentators on him. To understand the universe, we will have to start also with God. God is truth, Gandhi told us. Let me, without sounding disrespectful, as a Christian, I think God is known by many names. I will call God the supreme author. Define, use that word for God as well, or the first mover. But they all pay heed to what the three Abrahamic religions, Christianity, Islam, and the Jews, take from the Old Testament, where it said, "So God created man in his own image, in the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them." Thank you. Here we have a shared worldview, and it may sound very simple, but it is so profound and so basic. God, the creator, the divine author, and the first mover. The individual human being as created in the image of God. Just look at any newborn or contemplate at the side of a deceased family member. Life is so magnificent, so extremely important, and we cannot fully understand it. Still, this is what we are looking at. This is what we are dealing with. Each and every individual human being is created in the image of God in their thinking. And it's even said God created them, the plurality of human beings, humankind, each and everyone in God's image. In the words of Augustine, God is the ultimate source and point of origin for all that comes below, equated with being, goodness, and truth. Adding to this comes the Christian gospel that to these five was central, because the Christian teaching, according to which Jesus Christ, the Savior, changed the life of the human being by giving it immortality. And this was the single most profound change in the Western world ever. So let's think whatever we think about Christianity, but this, to understand the change, the basic change in thinking. The human being was given immortality that in the past only the cosmos had had. In Greek philosophy, you have immortality for cosmos and nothing else. So this is the background. Then let's look at the individual. Created in the image of God. That is partaking a special dignity that transcends every other value in the universe. This is distinct, this is important, this is setting the standard for everything. And when we speak of the individual, we speak of body and soul. And what is the soul? In Greek teaching, it's the obvious, the difference between the person alive and a dead one. When a person is dead, we see no soul, the way it was defined, to make it very, very simple. And the human being is a person, not just an individual. When an individual dies, the species remains. When a person dies, someone unique and unrepeatable is lost. The human person holds a unique dignity. No human being are marked out by nature for subordination to the interests of others, regardless of their being individuals naturally lacking in intelligence and in capacity, etc., etc. No subordination ever. In general, today, the sanctity of human life is a core value. So in a sense, we can build on what the five were thinking, because that has been adopted universally. A key characteristic of the human condition is its frailty. The human being is essentially vulnerable in every respect. Physically and mentally, the individual needs to protect her or himself, to secure means of sustaining life and a relevant human habitat. And particularly in vulnerable periods of life, such as infancy, old age, illness, etc. The dangers, actually, of life and to survive are everywhere. I'm not speaking just about traffic, but anything around us could be dangerous. Human life is a conditioned reality. Literally everything that the individual encounters thereby becomes a condition for her or his existence, for richer or poorer, for better or worse. The individual human being is, her or himself, a party to conditioning the individual's circumstances and a party to conditioning the circumstances of fellow human being. Every human being's act and omission will have a role to play in this context. There is no human void, as earlier said. Who is the individual human being? Let's be careful. We never speak about what is the human being. Maybe the medical science would look more carefully at what we are. But we, as lawyers, can never permit ourselves to look at anything but who the individual human being is. And that has actually also, throughout the millennia, been the understanding among the philosophers. Speech is one of the human capacities or human faculties, and there are several. It has been said that speech is actually what immerses us into the human condition. So it's one of the very interesting and special conditions that, or faculties that the human being has. But everything, speech can be considered an act. Every act we do is important. But as sailors say, no wind is good if one does not know where to sail. Similarly, any kind of action or omission regularly needs direction. Not in the least as it is conditioning the lives of people. The human faculties of reason and contemplation can provide such direction. It is in the very nature of the human being to follow the guide of reason in its actions. Augustine and the others, in line with Greek intellectualism, perceive the reason as having a dominant relation over other human capacities. Maybe later times have slightly reviewed that, but still accepts reason to be a profound human capacity. And it is exclusively human. We have animals who have an intellect to create tools, to do farming, but we don't have any professors of law among them. Reasoning, thinking is an exclusively human capacity. There exists a kind of common patrimony in the human race in terms of natural truths, such as the principles of nature and whatever is derived from them immediately by our reason. This provides the foundation for morality and justice on which the bonds of human society rests. To Aristotle, neither speech nor reason, but nous, the capacity for contemplation, is the primary human faculty. According to Aquinas, the truth can reveal itself only in complete human stillness. For the purpose of this seminar, it might be useful to contemplate a loved one, a hated one, or someone, just the marvelous human being. And the main characteristic of contemplation is that its content cannot be rendered in speech. The five all emphasize that the human being make moral choices and have a free will. Every human act and omission have a role to play in conditioning the circumstances of self and others. The human condition constitutes, in this sense, a moral drama. Without the freedom of the soul, there would be fatalism, as the human being would be conditioned totally by outside forces. That is not their view. The human being is capable of moral choice. It has power over its actions, a power that may be termed liberty. On the use of this liberty, the highest good and the greatest evil depend. The moral choice is frequently linked with a predicament of irreversibility. Acts and omissions, as soon as they belong to the past, cannot be undone, although there may be some repair before an effect has come up. The person is the subject of her or his own moral choices. To moral reflection, the issue of human freedom is crucial. There is a profound and intimate relationship between the two. Created them, not only the individual. The relational aspect of human life is introduced from the inception. The human being was placed in the company of others like itself, so that what was wanting to its nature and beyond its attainment, if left to its own resources, it might obtain by association with others. The human being, and this was fully adopted from the Greek thinking, is a social creature. Inter homines esse. Living is to be among people, and we are social. The human plurality, nonetheless, consists of the many singular immortal human beings, each person with an individuality and absolute uniqueness. So in the midst of this is there one word that serves to help us: balance, balance, balance. All human beings are equal. None are superior or inferior as being members of the same humanity. That means also that the five took up the old ancient Roman idea of the one liberty for all human beings. The five also emphasized that the human being will unite naturally in society and establish societies. Although the members of a society may have different ultimate values, they will have intermediate ends in common, such as a desire for justice and peace. The peace of all things lies in the tranquility of order, and order is the disposition of equal and unequal things in such a way as to give to each its proper place. A minimum of justice is essential to qualify as a commonwealth. That is the origin, the subject, and the purpose of all social institutions is and should be the human person. The fundamental moral rules of social life thus entail specific demands to which both public authorities and fellow human beings are required to pay heed. Actually, both Vittoria and Suarez, who have been commended for having contributed considerably to establishing modern international law, saw also the international community as being the natural extension of the small community of the family. We have to live in some kind of organized society. And according to Vittoria, due to the law of necessity, there are laws for such entities as well. Every aspect of life has a moral connotation as conditioning the life of self and others. Aquinas equated human behavior as such with moral acts. Moral acts is the same as human acts. The pivot in morality is the transcendent human dignity that is innate in every member of the human family, and the fact that living is being among fellow human beings. Morality is a code of conduct, normatively speaking. Morality is the code of conduct that all rational persons will endorse, the principles of human practical rationality. Here comes our reason and faculty to reason back. As far as morality is concerned, no one can legitimately rescind from the actual human condition and an objective reference to the truth about the good. Morality is for individuals, for groups, communities, and states. Law is distinguished from morality by having explicit written rules, penalties, and officials who interpret the laws and apply the penalties. Roman law, nonetheless, stated more than once that the explanatory reason for law is the human person for whose sake it is made. All the members of the community regulated by the law and all other persons within the law's ambit. Already in Roman law, back with Aristotle, with the Stoics, the philosophers, and Cicero, and in Gratian's Decretum, a canon lawyer, church lawyer from the 12th century, we find a reference to what is called natural law. And the medieval thinkers took this up in particular, and Aquinas holds a prime position, having invigorated and developed the concept of natural law. For Aquinas, there are two main characteristics of the natural law. God is the giver of the natural law, and for the human being, the natural law constitutes the principles of practical rationality. It is a fundamental thesis that the natural law is a participation in the eternal law, that rational plan by which all creation is ordered. Through the natural law, the human being participates in the internal law. As a rational being, the human being is able to understand her or his part in the eternal law and freely act on it. Thus, this is law, a rule of action put in place by one who has care for the community, as Aquinas defines it. It's God who provides for the universe, he has put it in place, and it is law. According to the five, there are several ways to know the content of the natural law. One is by revelation, but that's not exclusive, it's only helpful. The revelation is such as the Ten Commandments and what is found in the Bible. And the main thing which is found in the Bible, and many of you will then immediately think of the Golden Rule, and you're right. It is, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. And asked, when Augustine was asked, who's my neighbor? It's everyone. It's absolutely everyone. And Vittoria, when he was inflamed by the violence in the newly discovered areas in the Americas, said every single human being has the same value. And Suarez, when he argued, he was actually discussing the right to vote and endorse custom, he said even women do have reason, so it also goes for us. That's good. But actually, it's seen that the Ten Commandments, the Mosaic Law, is actually fulfilled, completed, or put into one overall law, being love your neighbor as yourself. And you can compare it to the Golden Rule as a positive or negative precept. The precepts of the natural law are universally identifiable by nature. It is not a matter of belonging to a specific faith. The natural law constitutes the principle of practical rationality for human beings. This is a status that natural law has by nature. These are the principles by which human action is to be judged as reasonable or unreasonable. The natural law, that is intrinsic to human nature and is, in essence, identical with human reason. Natural law is the law of reason, or the law of the requirements of reason. The natural law is value-based, and that's very important. The transcendent human dignity that is innate in every member of the human family is axiomatic. And since human nature remains the same over time, we don't change substantially. And as long as that is the case, all the five argues, natural law binds everywhere, all the time, and when it comes to precepts against real evil, such as the main example, killing the innocent, and then of course immediately rings bells such as genocide, crimes against humanity, grave breaches, etc., that is never permissible. Otherwise, it's teached that the natural law will have some precepts that may be accommodated to changing times, simply because there are master rules, love your neighbor as yourself, but it may be implied in different cultures at different times, differently, without violating the supreme rule. Some have said that actually Thomas Aquinas used the love your neighbor as yourself as a master rule. I would say yes and I would say no, because love your neighbor as yourself is actually much more. It is also endorsing the basic, intransigent human value. So it goes beyond being a master rule. Oh, and I will wind up. I hope you one day will have a time and chance to read the entire chapter, of which I've just given you tiny glimpses. But one of the points that actually Kant lost out on, which I would like to emphasize, is that in natural law theory, it is allowed to make an evil act to avoid an even greater evil, but never to achieve good. You can't do evil to do good, but you can limit the forces of evil by doing something less evil. Actually, natural law is intended to be part of a comprehensive theory of practical reasons that are fit to direct the human beings to the common good of each of our communities and its members, based on a sound understanding of the human being and of the lasting characteristics of its circumstances. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. For more open access audio recordings, films, and publications, go to silrap.org.